matter for me, and it's a proposal that I'm presenting to us members here, that before those regulations are to be published, the committee gets an opportunity to interact with that regulation. That's what I'm at the bottom of it, just to throw for members here, so that we have almost everything watertight. Will that be something that we are amenable to? I don't know what members think. Are we fine with that?
What is this, are you asking?
Regulations on any law that is passed. The regulations that get to be crafted that give effect to them, to its implementation. What I'm saying is a proposal. Is that before the department publishes those regulations, the committee of parliament is given an opportunity to interact with those regulations. Bamlara is be taken through. That's what I'm saying.
Chairperson, may I ask in what way is it possible to make it obligatory on the executive or the department to consult with the committee on that, because if it's not in the legislation that provides for it, you cannot depend on the goodwill of anybody to do it. I mean, they can just as well turn around and tell you that it's a prerogative of the department or the prerogative of the department in consultation with the minister or whatever. So I don't know, Chair, once we have the benefit of the legal people here, whether they can tell us in what way can that be made possible. That is important.
Quick one.
I also just want to say that, we must be very careful that we don't overstep our boundaries. I think our job is to pass this bill. And I think that that would be micromanaging what is happening afterwards if we go into the regulations. To me, the regulations would be the implementation phase of this, and the department would have to do that. I mean, I don't think it's part of our work to do that. Thank you.
To respond,
thank you, Chair. With regard to the regulations, it's basically what we have here. The Act is basically the skeleton. And the regulations gives more finer detail to whatever must be in place in order to effect to the Act. First of all, Parliament is empowered, or Parliament may call anybody to give account to the legislation that's before or that's implemented. And in addition to that, the Department is also subject to that scrutiny with regard to their functions. Even the council, for that matter, can be called to Parliament to account. So Parliament has that inherent oversight that's derived from the Constitution. So in addition to that, there has been legislation where the requirement to submit regulations to the committee just to be put in a position to look at it has been done previously, so that is also an option. But it's totally in the discretion of the committee as to how far the committee intends to execute this oversight function. Chair, thank you.
Are we fine, members?
Chair, no, I am happy. I think we must do the law, and if we have problems afterwards, there's always normal oversight processes from Parliament. If there's something that we pick up, if students are unhappy about something, I'm sure we can call the department and the minister and even the students together as part of our oversight role.
Sorry, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would suggest that what one should do is perhaps get the researchers to look at all the legislation that impact on our committee's work. Not only this one, all the legislation. And perhaps have a little diary of all the various rules and regulations that have been formulated up to now. and at least have copies of that available, and from time to time to check out, perhaps also through the departmental, of, no, not the departmental, the parliamentary officials, whether everything is being implemented according to what the regulations provide for. I think in that way, Chair, we will really be carrying out the sort of oversight that this mechanism here is supposed to be carrying out. So, fine, I agree with Advocate Theo here, that you as Parliament are not exercising your powers that you have, where you have the right to call any departmental official, any particular sub-department or subsection or whatever, or entities that fall within this particular department, to come here and come and account for their actions or whatever. But at the end of the day, it is this Parliament which provides the budgetary requirements of those entities in order to function. So it, I think we should do that, Chair.
I think the main aim for raising this issue was that we needed to, or rather we need to, you know, satisfy ourselves totally on a whole range of issues that we're raising related to, especially the 20A, 1 and 20, well, section 3, subsection 20A, so that we are clearer when we look at the regulation and having to read that in tandem with the amendment. Now, that's the whole aim, far from micromanaging. We do possess that right.
Of course. And we must exercise.
That's what I was saying initially. So we find that. At an appropriate time, when the department is ready, they shall indicate, we'll also have to get them to come through to us. Thank you. The other point I thought I might use just before it slips the mind, perhaps let's just go back to it. Before one forgets about it, you remember we called the Department of Labor, DTI, Home Affairs, and also the Agriculture Department some time, and the issue was about wool growers, and also the fact that there were issues of permits, away from corporate permits to individual farmers' application for the permits. I think the good news that I thought I might wish to share with us is that the wool growers have since come back to us, you know, to indicate that they're very grateful. One of those traders is Cape Moore Hair and Wool. Correct. They have since gotten a license for another 5 years. So I think we're getting
intervention
somewhere.
Of the committee as well.
We're getting somewhere. So they're still struggling with PKB. Their license expires in February of next year. But still there are discussions. There's a steering committee that is there that is pulling everything together. I just thought, let me just share that excitement on our part. One other issue, Dr. Mdusane, that we're dealing with relates to consultation with the students. And what form, you know, did that consultation take place? And again, the sentiments of the meeting here are such that, you know, for you to really engage in any program in a very sustainable way, you know, the slogan of those living with disabilities is absolutely relevant as it gets to talk about sustainability of any specific program. Nothing without us. Nothing about us without us. Now, Now, the consultation with the students also became one of those key thorny areas that we were discussing earlier. And perhaps it becomes important that in the course of your intervention that you could also explain just, you know, the form of that consultation. As you were saying when you came here, that among other things that you had to do was to consult with the stakeholder called students. The exercise that we are about will literally be going through, you know, the actual text itself. And the aim it is to work towards concluding if we can. But also we were clarified that the actual implementation of this law will effectively be 2014. So that members, we don't really put unnecessary undue pressure on ourselves. Yes, if we can do it faster, all the better. But also at the back of our minds, that timetable that has since been clarified. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair and honourable members. Maybe to clarify the issue on consultation. We understand that honourable members were asking a question on the format of consultation and probably the outcome of the consultation itself. I would like, with your permission, Chair, the registrar, the acting registrar, to explain the composition of the council to an extent that it sort of explains representation from the council side and why the emphasis on the consultation with the council by the minister. But of course, if there is time, then Dr. Songade to also probably indicate the outcome of the consultation with the students, the type of questions that were asked, and our response to the issues that were raised by the students themselves.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, the University of Pretoria is represented on council as a designated member, and through this representation, consultation takes place with the students. The students register from the second year with council and are part of the membership. They have been part of the consultation process by DAF. There's an open forum with the students through the executive committee of council annually, and the students are actually ready to serve the country. So there's a wide consultation. There's no problem with community service as such. Obviously, students have expressed concerns about when will it take place and how will it take place, etc. And this committee is also welcome to consult the students on the future and the implementation and the regulations. So on various forums and levels, students are represented. And they have indicated that they, even some of them will voluntarily do community service to test how it will be implemented. So they're ready to do it, they've been consulted, they are happy to do it, and they are part of the membership of council. They've got an annual meeting with the executive committee, and you know, there's absolutely no problem in terms of the consultation process. Dr. Songabe will tell you that there's been wide consultation. Even this year, he's had an information session with the students. Thank you.
I think that clarifies the issue. You want to further elaborate, Dr. Zaman?
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity. I think in this particular subject of the compulsory community service, I just want to indicate that in particular, when we started in 2006, we first met with the executive, the OPVSC, and immediately after that...
OPVSC?
OPVSC, Ondersteunende Board, Veterinary and Paraveterinary Student Committee. In other words, the executive committee for the students. In our initial consultations, and we had a number of back and forth meetings in which the executive actually came to the department to discuss. Furthermore, after those consultations, they then sat down and wrote specific issues that they were concerned about and so on, in other words, formally to the department, in which we then arranged a complete student workshop in May 2008, in which we sat with the students. And unfortunately, between 2008 and now, 4 years has passed, and the whole group of the students we actually spoke to at that time had gone, and we had new students. And just at the beginning of this year, on the 8th of May, on the 8th of March, we also have exactly the replica of the workshop we had in 2008. The students have all indicated that in principle they support a one-year compulsory community service, but like all the stakeholders that we have spoken to, they have expressed concerns and over a range of issues related to the implementation, related to operations, related to the issues of safety and so on. And in as far as the workshops then that we dealt with, we were actually trying to respond to those specific issues. It ranges from the issues of the salaries, the issues of the accommodation, the issues of the security, and the availability of infrastructure, basically. Thank you, Chair.
We did receive a copy of this. This is dating back to 2008. Did we? This is a correspondence from OPVSC, on the support Veterinary and Para-Veterinary Student Committee. Sorry about that. I thought Madia had again, this explains the very issues that Dr. Songabe is referring to, and the whole range of issues are being raised here. Maybe the point raised earlier on by one of our legal brains was that of Parliament having a right to consult even itself. Of course, that right was given when we had the public hearing. Adverts were out in 4 newspapers, and then unfortunately none of the students came through, or their representatives, or any youth movement with their representatives to submit. The question that arises now is whether we'll still be keen as a committee to receive such submissions from those student bodies or youth bodies. I think that's a decision that we must also make. In other words, it would certainly mean that we'll be going forward and backward. So that opportunity was provided through that public hearing, but none of them did come through, nor did they submit anything.
think that the what one could do is perhaps send a letter to the... I don't think we have too many faculties in the country. I think it's Onderstepoort and is there one at Stellenbosch? No. Only Onderstepoort. So that's Pretoria, Chair. All we do is perhaps send a letter, I don't know to whom the registrar can tell us, and invite them that in case they have any, they can send us a memo or something. And if they wish to speak to the committee, they are welcome to do so, just as a gesture of goodwill. But I think, Jefferson, we must now be future-orientated. And in future, I would say that what is necessary is that, fine, we will now be sort of in line with the medical profession, where whoever qualifies will have to do community service. In this case, it is 12 months. So whenever there is a new student intake, who start off in their first year, there should be an arrangement whereby the institution, in this case Onderstepoort, informs them that now that you are enrolling for this course, or that their prospectus must make it quite clear that all students who are enrolled for a veterinary course will be liable for doing community service after they qualify, so that everyone knows what they are letting themselves in for. See, it's a question, Chairperson, where I want to become a vet. I must just acquaint myself with what are the requirements and what will the end result be the day I qualify. And as long as that is brought home to every student that now enrolls, because what we hear here is that the consultations here started 4 years ago. So the students that started then, I think it's a 7-year course or a 6-year course. A 6-year course. With a 1-year community service, it makes it 7 years, shall we say. So if they started consulting 4 years ago, a person in the second or third year would now be finishing this year, basically. So I think, Chairperson, if there can be that kind of arrangement, which you cannot really legislate, I mean, the prospectus of this particular institution must say to the people.
Are we fine with that, members? Okay. Okay, I think we should... Members, I think we shall then have to go through the actual text itself. That is fine with us. You want us to go back? I think there hasn't been any changes to this bill itself since last time. Still the same old copy. Same old sentences. And perhaps let's start off then with page one, the very cover page itself, and especially also dealing with the tagging. Just a very brief understanding of the page, very first page. It's quite important because tagging can take you. Can take you either forward or backward once you miss it at that tagging. Just as also very brief explanation why section 75 is not instead of section 76. Who's going to be taking us to Commissioner? I see Dr. Sandav is ready with his mic on.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the tagging, the bill is classified as a Section 75 bill, and may I refer the honourable members to the explanation set out on page 13 of the bill. It's the clause 5 of the memorandum on the objects of the bill. There's the explanation basically what why the bill has been tagged as a 75 bill, which is an ordinary bill not affecting provinces. It in paragraph 5.2, it says that section 74 sets out the procedure for bills amending the constitution, and therefore does not apply to this bill. So this is not a bill where the constitution is amended. Then section 76 sets out the procedure for ordinary bills affecting provinces. Now, one must remember the competencies of the legislative competences of provinces and the national is set out in the constitution. Now, part A of Schedule 5, let me just get it quickly. Schedule 5 of the Constitution. Schedule 5 deals with functional areas of exclusive provincial legislative competence. Now, under Part A of Schedule 5 to the Constitution, veterinary services, excluding the regulation of the profession, amongst the matters that fall within the functional areas of exclusive provincial legislative competence. What's basically said here, it says that to further regulate the practice of the profession, it does not fall under the exclusive provincial competence as set out in Schedule 5 of the Constitution. So therefore the bill has been tagged as a 75 bill, Chair, honourable members, because it's not a exclusive provincial competence for that matter. And that was the opinion that was given when the bill was tagged. Thank you, Chair.
Are we fine with that understanding? It's a straightforward one. Constitution is also referred. Okay. You want to still on this one? We're moving to second page. Second page? Second page is the section that deals, that has got a title, you call the bill with the objects.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, do you want me to start from the beginning, or can we continue, or may we continue with clause 4? Myself.
Can we go through bill, if there is anything? We're starting from scratch now. But just rush through if we do not have any specific issues. Without waste of time, can we?
Thank you. The bill, to amend the Veterinary and Paraveterinary Professions Act 1982 so as to provide for the establishment of an appeal committee and its functions, to provide for the performance of compulsory community service by certain persons registering in terms of the Act, the inclusion of a physiological condition in the meaning of practicing veterinary profession and paraveterinary profession, and the registration of a person who has completed the relevant qualifications which have not been conferred, to provide for a registered foreign veterinarian to continue practicing by attaining either citizenship or permanent residency, to provide for continuing professional development with suspicion of registered persons and the termination of such suspension, to provide for the appointment and powers of inspection officers, the investigation of complaints and cost orders, and to provide for matters connected therewith. Amendment of Section 12 of Act 19 of 1982. Section 12 of the Veterinary and Paraveterinary Professions Act 1982, herein referred to as the Principal Act, is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1. The Council may, in brackets, from time to time, establish such other committees as it may deem necessary to exercise such powers and perform such functions as may, brackets, from time to time, close brackets, be conferred or imposed upon or delegated to them by the Council. B. By the substitution for subsection 3 of the following subsection, the Council shall designate a member of the committee who shall also be a member of the Council as the brackets chairman, close brackets chairperson of that committee. C. By the insertion of the following subsection after subsection 3. 3A. Unless an appeal is lodged in terms of section 33A in a prescribed manner, a decision of a committee established in terms of subsection 1 to institute an inquiry in terms of section 31 or 31A into the conduct of any registered person shall be of force and effect from the date determined by that committee, and B, by a substitution for subsection 4 of the following subsection: 4, the provisions of section 10.3, 5, 6 and 7 and 11.4 shall mutatis mutandis apply to a committee established under this section in terms of section 1, under this section in brackets. Clause 2, the following section is hereby inserted in the Principal Act after section 12, ad hoc appeal committees. The council shall establish an ad hoc appeal committee to consider any appeal lodged in terms of section 33A against the decision of an inquiry instituted in terms of section 31 or 31A in a prescribed manner. An ad hoc appeal committee shall consist of a chairperson with knowledge in the practice of law for a cumulative period of at least 10 years and not more than two registered persons draw from the profession similar to that of a registered person in respect of whose conduct inquiry was instituted. An ad hoc appeal committee shall have the power to consider any appeal contemplated in subsection 1 and may, in a prescribed manner, confirm the decision, amend, vary or set aside the decision, remit the matter back to the council or a committee with such instruction as it may consider necessary, or make such other order, including an order for costs, as it considered appropriate. A decision of an ad hoc appeal committee in terms of this Act shall be final and of force and effect from the date determined by that appeal committee, subject to the review by a court of law with competent jurisdiction. Clause 3. The following section is hereby inserted in the Principal Act after section 20, compulsory community service. From the date of commencement of section 3 of the veterinary and paraveterinary profession.
Who shall apply this notion of agreeing or not after we have gone through the whole text, how we find that, so that we don't have to, after each section, you know, agree and so on.
28. From the date of commencement of section 3 of the Veterinary and Paraveterinary Professions Amendment Act, 2012, any person registering for a first time to practice a veterinary profession or paraveterinary profession in terms of this Act shall perform in the prescribed manner compulsory community services in that veterinary profession or paraveterinary profession for a period of 1 year and shall, upon completion of such service, be entitled to practice a profession for which he or she is registered. The Minister may, after consultation with the Council, prescribe the performance of compulsory community service contemplated in subsection 1, including but not limited to A. The registration of persons for compulsory community service, B. The conditions of employment pertaining to persons who perform such service, the places at which compulsory community service is to be performed, and the conditions subject to which the service may be interrupted. 3. The Minister may, after consultation with the Council, prescribe the circumstances under which a person contemplated in subsection 1 may be exempted from performance of a compulsory community service. Clause 4. Section 23 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for paragraph D of subsection 2 of the following paragraph. D. Performing any act which has as its purpose diagnosing, treating or preventing any pathological or physiological condition in any animal or which constitutes a surgical operation on any animal and is deemed in terms of the rules to pertain specially to the veterinary profession. Clause 5. Section 24 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1A. Subject to the provisions of section 1A and paragraph B, a person may be registered in terms of this Act to practice a veterinary profession or a paraveterinary profession if, in the case of a natural person, that person is a holder of an appropriate degree, diploma or certificate prescribed in a court accepted under section 20, or in the case of a juristic person, that person is a corporation or a private company. B. A person contemplated in paragraph A1 who registers for the first time to practice a veterinary profession or paraveterinary profession in terms of this Act may not be so registered unless that person simultaneously registered for compulsory community service contemplated in section 28. And B. By the substitution in subsection 1AA for subparagraph 1 of the following subparagraph. 1. From the date on which the person fulfilled the academic requirements for the degree, diploma or certificate contemplated in subsection 1 was granted to a person up to the date on which such person applies for registration in terms of section 25 for the first time. 4. Clause 6. Section 25 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 6 of the following subsection. If a person is registered by virtue of a degree, diploma or certificate which is accepted in terms of section 25, and such person is resident in the Republic but is not a South African resident, his or her registration shall lapse 7 years or such further period as the Council may in a particular case determine after the date on which a certificate of registration was issued to him or her. In terms of subsection 2, unless he or she becomes a South African citizen or has attained permanent resident status in terms of section 26 and 27 of the Immigration Act 2002, Act Number 13 of 2002, before the date on which his or her registration is so to be lapsed. A person whose registration has lapsed, as contemplated in paragraph A, shall not again be registered in terms of the Act before he or she is a South African citizen or has attained permanent resident status in terms of the Immigration Act. Clause 7. The following section is hereby...
Can we interject in the course of this allowance?
This is by number 45, at the end it says before the date on which his or her registration is so to lapse. Can you just say will lapse or something? This makes some, the wording is funny. It doesn't make sense.
Can I have one question here to the drafters? What is the rationale behind saying that you must either be a South African citizen or you must at least have a residence permit? Now, what if a veterinarian, for example, who is a Lesotho citizen, and that veterinarian would like to assist on the border and he comes over to South Africa to help? He is a citizen of Lesotho. He is a registered veterinarian in Lesotho. But in terms of this particular clause, if he is not a resident of South Africa or if he does not have a residence permit to be in South Africa, then he don't. What is the rationale? For example, also, Chairperson, let us assume we have an expert on a particular disease, a veterinarian, say, in one of the European countries, and he wants to come and practice here for 3 months or whatever. He doesn't want to take out the residence. He comes here on a visa of 6 months and he wants to practice or help in a particular research project or particular issue that with which we are grappling. In terms of what I read here, that would not be possible unless that person has a residence permit or is a South African citizen. Or is there some way in which a special concession can be allowed? A visiting veterinarian or something of that sort. Is it in common law permissible? Quick one.
Yes. This section is... The section is merely amended to allow for people to get permanent residency in South Africa without surrendering the citizenship of a country he comes from. So you can practice here in terms of the Immigration Act that was previously not there. So we only added that for that reason.
It's got to be registered.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. Chair, just in response to Mr. Abrams' question, Section 23.1c of the Act allows for temporary authorization of expertise.
In the current...
Yes.
Okay, thanks. You can continue. You stopped at 59.50.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 7. The following section is hereby inserted in the Principal Act after Section 28. Suspension of registration and termination of such suspension. 28A1. A committee established in terms of Section 12.1 may authorize a registrar to suspend the registration of any person who is registered or deemed to be registered in terms of this Act and who has failed to comply with the requirements in respect of continuing professional development as prescribed, or B, on the basis of a complaint lodged with the council or information available at the disposal of the council is posing an imminent threat or danger to the public or any animal in terms of his or her professional practice. 2. The authorization contemplated in subsection 1 shall be granted only after A. Such person has been notified in writing by the registrar of the intended suspension of his or her registration. Such person has been afforded the opportunity to furnish reasons why his or her registration should not be suspended. C. The committee has conducted the hearing in a prescribed manner. And B. Such person has been informed and has exercised
informed of.
Such person has been informed of and has exercised or waived his or her right to lodge an appeal in terms of Section 33A against the decision of a council or committee. 3. Subject to subsection 2, the registrar shall issue a written notice of suspension and forward such notice to such person by way of certified mail, fax or electronic transmission to the address appearing in respect of him or her in the register. 4.
Sorry, Chair. I've just got a question here that I reflect. The notice shall be by way of certified mail, which means in the old language a registered letter. Or fax or electronic transmission to the address appearing in respect of him or her in the register. Now, let us assume that you have sent the person something by certified mail, and that certified mail is sent back as undelivered. You don't have a fax number. You don't have an electronic transmission, email or something. What happens then? Because you've only got three things that you are mentioning here through which the correspondence has reached the person. And if none of these are able to kick in and work, what happens then? I notice that, of course, you say here further on that as from the date of receipt of the notice contemplated in subsection 3 by such person. Now, the question here is that the person has not received the notice. What happens? That's all I'm asking.
Okay, I don't. Thank you. I don't know how they work in practice, but I think we must have proof that he received it before we can go any further with it. But if the Veterinary Council can explain how it works in practice.
Maybe what we should be saying, Chair, through you, is that there is a procedure that is going to be described in the inquiry that will also include the possibility of a sheriff that is going to be used. In actual fact, the next thing is already described in the procedure for inquiries, that if all those methods fail, then a sheriff, of course, may be used to deliver the notice.
Is considered that the notice has been delivered to him.
Now, the procedure for inquiry already describes that if all this fails, then alternative methods can
be
used, like, they will be found, and a sheriff of court may also be used. a sheriff may also be used.
Yeah, I'm merely asking because you see, what one must remember is that this whole section 28 is a totally new section. I mean, where that line bordering, a totally new section. So we don't have any knowledge of this kind of way of delivering a notice or a correspondence, and that is why I'm asking. It may be a grey area, but I think that the department should look at that very carefully. But Chairperson, there's also another issue related to people who want to come and practice here, or even those that claim that they have a qualification. And that, Chairperson, is in what way would the department be able to verify the qualifications of people that it allows to practice here as so-called experts in a particular field? I come now, for example, from Pakistan, and I say that I've got these qualifications. How are you going to verify? But I'll buy a skeleton in Pakistan. So how do you verify that, Chairperson? And the other problem is that under normal processes, what is the time frame in your experiences that it takes to verify the qualifications of a person? What we must remember here, Chairperson, is that we read from time to time of people who have gained access to top jobs or positions or whatever on the basis of some or other qualification that they presented and which was accepted as a bona fide, genuine qualification. So, Chairperson, the other issue is that the registration in some country where that person is registered as a veterinarian, that registration certificate alone, with a recognized body, for argument's sake, does not necessarily mean that the person has a qualification in order to practice veterinary profession. So I don't know whether you have provided for these safeguards, because somewhere along the line,
we're living in a society where people come here with all sorts of documentation, and in fact, I think there's been cases here where certain people obtained top jobs, and all the time they didn't have the type of qualification commensurate with the type of work that they were doing here, and they raked in millions and left the country again. So, and then we have these porous borders of ours, Chair. I mean, any guy can come into this country. But hell, you go to Zimbabwe without a valid passport or whatever, you'll be locked up, you'll be in jail. So we've got these problems that we must bear in mind. We've got a department that is dysfunctional in terms of controlling the inflow and outflow of people. And we have this kind of thing that can happen. And that can cost our industries, especially an arm and a leg, Chair. We need to be very careful. I would just like to know whether in this bill you have given thought to it, and if so, I haven't really, when I looked through it, found anything that sort of covers, shall we call it a fraudulent or a forged form of qualification. Finally, Chairperson, we've had situations in the country in the past where certain so-called institutions overseas were redlined. I'm talking of many years ago, especially in the medical field. They were redlined because you could virtually buy a degree over there and that sort of thing. And that's very life, Chair. I mean, if you look at the number of people that are on our roads today driving around in motor cars, how many of them are sitting with forged driving licenses? How many murderers have we got on the road, Chair, that can murder people as accidents? So we need to be very, very strong on this.
If some of the issues raised by Mr. Brom are covered elsewhere, you might wish to make that point to an extent that will come to that at that point. The last one that I thought I might wish to raise very quickly, talking here about suspension. Whether the duration is something that is covered in your regulation?
To speak to the verification of qualifications, that aspect. If you come to South Africa to practice in South Africa with another qualification, you have to submit that qualification. If for the first time that qualification is being assessed by examination, then you have to submit the full curriculum details. These curriculum details then goes to experts. They assess whether the qualification can be accepted for you to sit a council registration examination. If in the past we received candidates from elsewhere to sit the examination, then we accept that qualification. But we talk about a letter of good standing from the professional board in the country where the person has practiced. And the professional boards have an arrangement. They send the letter of professional good standing directly to the board. And we have contact with those boards. So that, in terms of verification of qualifications, in the 18, 19 years that I have served this council, there's never been any person registered without the required qualification. The Act provides for verification of qualifications.
The original Act.
Yes.
As long as you have it and as long as you give us the assurance that it has worked, because it is an area of great concern.
Thank you. We also referred to Section 20 of the Principal Act itself, which deals with qualification for registration in terms of the actual Act itself, and 25. I think the issues are covered in that regard. So you still want to...
Thank you, Chair. Just for the benefit of the members, Section 41 of the Principal Act also provides for penalties in case of false statements regarding documents that are submitted to the council, and also in cases of fraud, that there are penalties and if they're found guilty of those offences. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I take note of what the legal eagles and the registrar is saying. But you know, Chair, as we sit here, we have in our country the kretsiers and such people who come here under other sort of pretenses, and they carry on their illegal activity unabated in our country. So while the law says this, that, and the other, and for example, Chair, the law says that nobody has a right to lynch me. But the law cannot absolutely save me from being lynched. That is the dilemma. So, I mean, that's why I refer to our porous borders, Chair. Now, you take the name that I mentioned. That person, you know, is more freer in this country than you and I are. We are subjected to so many rules and regulations. That person is not. So, likewise, Chair, I don't think that what I hear is foolproof. And that worries me. That a person can come here and come with some other documentation. We have a panel here that looks at it or whatever. I don't know, Chair. I'm just saying that what I see happening around me in the country today worries me. That anybody can come here and pose as something or somebody. We've got cases, Chair, very recent ones, where people have posed, for example, a thug. A thug had posed as a high-ranking police officer. And he goes from here to another province, especially, I think, in KZN, where he was treated, well, you know, your lordship, top person in the police force. Turned out to be the boss of a car hijacking syndicate.
Mr. Abram, we hear all what you're saying. No, don't be up for it. Now, the issues that we are about, perhaps those could be real. But the registrar is saying, in the 19 years she's been in the council, there hasn't been such an experience. Maybe it is still to come. You never know. But what we are dealing here, we're dealing with the reality that we have in front of ourselves, insofar as this profession is concerned. Yes, there are such hypotheses that it may, but there are mechanisms in place that could detect such, that would work against such, insofar as the principal act is concerned, section 41 and section 20. I think we should move more from a premise, you know, that says what we do have currently, it works and it has been working and it continues to work. That is the reality that we are confronted with here. Insofar as dealing with this professional setup that we are dealing with here as we speak. And I think that's the premise in which we need to move from. Otherwise, we can really, you know, rake a whole range of, you know, other examples that may not necessarily be related to here, per se. You know, somebody could also come up with something that says, no, you know, Tony Leon's father had, you know, sentenced people to, you know, death, you know, and perhaps whether it is related here or not. So those are the kind of things that I really want us to be wary of as we move forward with this whole situation. Okay?
Chairperson, I take note of what you say.
Uh-huh.
But you know, this gray hair here didn't get gray in the sun. I've experienced so many things. I see so many things happening around me. So I need to forewarn you that are your mechanisms, that's what I've asked, are your mechanisms foolproof? And
but there can never be anything like that in real life.
Excuse me?
There can never be anything like that in real life.
I can't hear you, Jim.
There can never be anything called foolproof in real life.
Listen, you see, when you make legislation, you must try to go as close to the ideal situation as possible. You leave no gray areas. All I'm asking, is it possible that somebody can pitch up here with forged documentation? Possible that things can happen? Bearing in mind that our immigration system in the country is not foolproof. So we have to bear these things in mind, Chair. If I fail to say it yet, and if I fail to be very suspicious about what could possibly happen, I will be letting future generations down. Because this legislation, Chair, we are amending it. We are providing new conditions here. There are clauses here that are now brand new. It is not an amendment to a particular clause at the moment. And that worries me. Have we looked at those aspects? If we haven't, Chair, let us look at it. So that we make legislation which is as close to perfection as possible. I mean, nothing in this country is infallible. Nothing in law is infallible. But we need to, when we make law, see that we come as close to an ideal situation as possible.
Okay.
I think the council says they've noted what Mr. Abram said, although they didn't have any, they never had those problems, but they've noted what is being said here.
Okay, we can proceed. You're going forward.
Thank you. Four. As from a date of receipt of a notice contemplated in subsection 3 by such person, A, any registration certificate issued in terms of this Act to that person shall be deemed to be suspended, and B, he or she shall immediately cease to practice a veterinary profession or paraveterinary profession in respect of which he or she is registered, or to perform any act which he or she, in his or her capacity as a registered person, is entitled to perform until such time as the suspension of his or her registration is terminated by written notice in terms of subsection 5. 5. The suspension of any person in terms of subsection 1 shall be terminated by the registrar upon A. the expiry of a suspension period, such person complying with requirements in respect of continuing professional development as prescribed, or his or her compliance with such other requirements as the council may determine. Clause 8. The following section is hereby inserted in the Principal Act after section 29, powers of officers and other persons. 29A1. Any officer appointed in terms of this Act and who is required or authorized to perform any duty on behalf of a council, or any person appointed by virtue of provisions of section 43(1)(k) to conduct any inspection, may without a warrant enter any veterinary facility at any time reasonable for the proper performance of such duty, or to conduct such inspection and perform such duty or conduct such inspection. 2. An officer or person referred to in subsection 1 may, where necessary, be accompanied by a police official and any other person reasonably required to render assistance to him or her. 3. Every officer or person referred to in subsection 1 shall be issued with a certificate signed by the registrar and containing the name of that officer or person, as well as a statement to the effect that A. the officer or person has so been appointed, and B. he or she is empowered to perform any duty or conduct an inspection in terms of this Act. 4. Whenever an officer or person referred to in subsection 1 performs a duty or conducts an inspection in terms of this Act, he or she shall A. be in possession of a certificate referred to in subsection 3, and B. produce that certificate to any person who is affected by his or her action. Clause 9. Manner in which certain investigations may be instituted. 31A1. If the registrar deems it necessary for the achievement of the object of this Act and to establish more facts, he or she may institute or cause to be instituted an investigation. A. into any alleged contravention of or failure to comply with any provisions of this Act. B. in order to determine if any provision of this Act applies to or has been contravened by any registered person, and C. into any charge, complaint or allegation of unprofessional conduct by any registered person. 2. Subject to subsection 1, the registrar may, with the approval of a council, appoint A. an officer of a council as an investigation officer for a particular investigation, or B. any person other than an officer of a council and who is not in the full-time employment of a council as an investigating officer for a particular investigation, or to assist the officer contemplated in paragraph A. 3. Any person appointed in terms of subsection 2B shall, for the purpose of his investigation in question, have the same powers and duties as an officer referred to in subsection 2A. 4. The register shall issue to every investigation officer appointed in terms of section 2A or B, as the case may be, in a certificate signed by the registrar and containing the name of that officer or person, as well as statement to the effect that A. the officer or person has so been appointed, and B. he or she is empowered to perform any function or conduct an investigation in terms of this Act. 5. Whenever an investigation officer exercises any power or performs any function in terms of this Act, he or she shall A. be in possession of a certificate of appointment issued in terms of subsection 4, and B. produce that certificate to any person who is affected by his or her action. 6A. The registrar or an investigation officer who carries out an investigation under this Act shall compile a report of the investigation, and a report compiled by an investigation officer shall be submitted to the registrar. B. If such report 1. reveals prima facie evidence of unprofessional conduct contemplated in this Act, and no complaint or charge has been lodged or laid, or no allegation regarding the conduct in question has been made for the purpose of inquiry in terms of section 31, such report shall be deemed to be a complaint made for that purpose, and the registrar shall serve a copy thereof on the registered person concerned. 2. Reveals prima facie evidence which makes it desirable that inquiry in terms of section 31 be instituted, the registrar shall forward a copy thereof to the committee established in terms of section 12(1) to further investigate and deal with the manner in terms of this Act. C. If such report does not reveal any prima facie evidence of unprofessional conduct contemplated in this Act, the registrar shall serve a copy thereof on the registered person concerned in the prescribed manner. D. To the extent that such report contains statements of witnesses which would have been admissible as oral evidence at any Section 31, the provisions of Section 213 of the Criminal Procedure Act 1977 shall apply mutatis mutandis in respect of those statements at such inquiry. 7. Any person who carries out or assists with an investigation in terms of this Act shall keep or assist in preserving confidentiality in respect of all facts which come to his or her notice in the performance of his or her duties, and shall not disclose any such fact to any person except the registrar, the president of the council, or the public prosecutor concerned in the case of the investigation of an offence in terms of this Act, or by an order of the court. Entry and search. 31B1. An investigation officer contemplated in section 31A2 may, on the authority of a warrant contemplated in subsection 4 and without prior notice, A. at any time reasonable for the proper performance of his or her duties in terms of this Act, enter upon and search any premises of veterinary facility where clinical veterinary services are rendered and specified in the warrant to carry out an investigation and make any inquiry as he or she deems necessary. B. While he or she is on the premises or any other time, request the person whose conduct is being investigated to immediately or at the time and place determined by him or her or the registrar, 1. Produce to him or her such records or electronic data or both relating to or which he or she on reasonable grounds believes to relate to the matter which he or she is investigating, and such records and electronic data or both are or were present on the premises or are or were in the possession or custody or under the control of that person or his or her employee or agent, and 2. Furnish such explanations to him or her as he or she may require in respect of any such records or electronic data or both. C. At any time and at any place, 1. Request any person who has or is suspected on reasonable grounds of having in his or her possession or custody or under his or her control any records or electronic data or both relating to the matter which is being investigated to produce such records or electronic data or both immediately or at a time and place determined by the registrar or him or her. 2. Examine such records or electronic data or both. 3. Make extracts from and copies of such records or electronic data or both. And 4. Request any person to furnish such explanations to him or her as he or she may require. 2. An investigating officer contemplated in subsection 1 may, where necessary, be accompanied by a police official. An investigation officer or a person assisting an investigation officer contemplated in subsection 1 who removes or sees anything from the premises or facility being searched shall A. issue a receipt for it to the owner or person in control of the premises or facility, and B. unless it is an item prohibited in terms of this Act or the rules, return it as soon as practical after achieving the purpose for which it was removed or seized. 4. A warrant referred to in subsection 1 may be issued by a magistrate or a judge of a court of law with competent jurisdiction if it appears from information on oath or affirmation that there are reasonable grounds to believe that there is evidence available in or upon such premises or facility of a contravention or alleged contravention of this Act or the rules. 5. No person is entitled to compensation for any loss or damages arising out of any bona fide action by an investigation officer, a person assisting an investigation officer, or police official referred to in subsection 2 of this section. 6. An investigation officer who enters and searches any premises under this section must conduct the entry and search with strict regard to decency and good order, including regard for each person's right to dignity, freedom and security and privacy. 7. During any search under this section, only a female investigating officer or police officer may search a female person, and only a male investigation officer or police officer may search a male person.
Chairperson, sorry, on the previous page. On the previous page, Chair, just before this particular clause, 31B, the last lines, just after 9, 10, I think prosecutor concerned in the case of an investigation of an offence in terms of this act or by an order of a court. I would just like to ask a question. What happens to such a transgressor? Someone that has... This law says that this person shall not disclose. But human beings being what they are, someone goes and discloses to someone or whatever. What happens to that person?
That's just a new one. Thank you. On the first question about line 12.
Just before that, there's another meeting that is due here. Whether we continue and conclude, which will take us perhaps for another 15 minutes. Continue.
Yes.
Okay, let's try and be considerate with that as well as we continue. Okay, can you respond?
Yes. Thank you, sir. Second question about all these sections not put in regulations and be better in regulations. Well, my understanding is there must be empowering sections in the Act to make any regulations. But the state law advisor can confirm that. And then the last question about no person is entitled for compensation. And as also stated, out of any bona fide, like in good faith, I presume it's like when you seize medicine or something that and that gets off or broken or whatever, then that guy can't, because that stuff was seized. And as we say, it's on a bona fide, it's not that we're going to be reckless. That's why it's put in.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the Honourable Member's question with regard to why is this not catered for in the regulations, these are substantive provisions which deals with the regulatory functions of the Council. Currently, the Act provides for also substantive provisions regarding inquiries by the Council, also the procedures for inquiries. So this basically is classified under that particular category of substantive provisions, also because it affects people's rights with regard to entry and with regard to search procedures. So it's best to, the minimum, set out those provisions in substantive clauses. Thank you.
Continue. Clause 10. Section 33 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the addition of the following subsection. The Council may make an order as regards the cost incurred by the Council or committee, as the case may be, relating to an inquiry or investigation to the conduct of a person registered or deemed to be registered in terms of this Act, of an amount not exceeding the amount determined by the Minister by notice in the Gazette. Clause 11. Appeals against decision of the committee. 33A. Any person whose rights may be adversely affected by a decision of the committee established in terms of section 12(1) to institute an inquiry in terms of this Act may in the prescribed manner appeal against such decision to the ad hoc appeal committee established in terms of section 12(a)(1). Clause 12. Section 41 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A. By the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph R of the following paragraph. R. Supplies are offered to supply to any person who is not registered or deemed to be registered in terms of this Act any instrument or appliance which can primarily be used for services which is in terms of the rules are deemed to pertain specially to a veterinary profession or paraveterinary profession, knowing that the instrument or appliance concerned will be used by such unregistered person for the rendering for gain of service of the kind of which he or she in terms of this Act prohibited to perform for gain. B. By the insertion in subsection 1 of the following paragraph after paragraph R. S. Fails to give or refuses access to an officer or investigation officer or a person assisting an officer or investigation officer or any person appointed by virtue of sections 29A or 31A to conduct any inspection in terms of this Act if that officer, investigation officer or person requests enters to any veterinary facility or premises or obstructs or hinders to such officer, investigation officer or person in the execution of his or her duties under this Act, or fails or refuses to give information that he or she may lawfully be required to give such officer, investigation officer or person, or gives to such officer, investigation officer or person false or misleading information, knowing it to be false or misleading. D. Impersonates the registrar of any or any officer, an investigation officer or person assisting an officer, investigation officer or person appointed in terms of this Act, or U, contravenes or fails to comply with the provisions of section that 32A is wrong, it's supposed to be 31A7 and 31B1. C. By the substitution in subsection 1 for subparagraph 1 of the following subparagraph. 1. On the first conviction of a contravention referred to in paragraph A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, S, T, or U, be liable to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 1 year or to both a fine and such imprisonment. Clause 13. Section 43 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the insertion in subsection 1 of the following paragraphs after paragraph J. K. The appointment of persons to carry out investigations at or inspect any premises or veterinary facility where clinical veterinary services are being rendered. L. The duties of persons appointed in terms of paragraph K and the fees payable to them by the Council in respect of investigations or inspections in terms of this Act. Short title and commencement. Clause 14. This act is called the Veterinary and Paraveterinary Professions Amendment Act 2012 and comes into operation on a date determined by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. Shall I continue with the memorandum?
Members, that is the amendment in front of ourselves. Any comments first before we assist him?
Chairperson, I think we did ask about the implementation last time. We did discuss the implementation of the year compulsory service of the students, but if the act of the bill becomes act, how soon can this other implementation happen, especially the section that we dealt with now of the investigations and if the registrar is ready, or is there also processes that need to be followed? I'm just thinking of time frame for the rest of these things.
Quick one.
Well, my understanding that everything will kick in together, but when it's act and it will then provide for the students to only 2014 to come in, but as soon as this act is promulgated, the investigations and all those things will start.
Can I raise the motion of the desirability? In the opinion of the committee, the legislation is desirable to amend the Veterinary and Paraveterinary Act of 1982 and to provide for matters connected therewith. And then the report accordingly. The committee considered the subject of the Veterinary and Paraveterinary Profession Amendment Bill referred to and classified by the Joint Tagging Mechanism as Section 75 Bill, reports the bill without amendment.
There's an amendment.
Which amendment? Any mover? Point is taken. Yeah, the point is taken. Mm-hmm. Any mover for?
Yeah.
Mama Pirus Maswane.
I move for the adoption of
the Miss Dana, what your hand up?
Yes, I'm taking the chair.
Okay, so the passage of this bill is therefore adopted by this committee and to be referred to the executive and all the processes that follow. Okay, thanks, members. We shall be informed accordingly about our program for next week. We were attempting to get the red meat producers for this week. Unfortunately, they were not available. And then we will also be informed about